Accession number 10614, rule 3.
Mr. John March, reel 3. You were in the hospital at Bruges, Belgian hospital at Bruges. What happened next then?
Well, it's difficult to tell you accurately, but we were there quite a number of days, and then the whole area being occupied by the Germans, they eventually got round visiting hospitals, just in case what they might find there. Well, they're quite surprised to find a few British there, because there are only about 8 or 9 of us there. Presumably it's the way the war went and where the wounded went, because we were probably pushed up with Belgian units in Bruges. And what happened was, it was then, of course, I think they put some sort of guard on us, so we weren't allowed out of the hospital or something, in case we escaped. But anyway, I remember being moved subsequently to a big old a type of barn or a huge empty factory, where we were involved with quite a lot of the British. It must have been a collecting point.
And where was this at? Do you know?
It was somewhere near Bruges, but I can't tell you where. It's a huge barn. See, we lay down on the straw and on the sawdust and things like this, and very little food, if any. And it's a mixture of all sorts of us: regular army officers, regular army troops, RAF people like this. And I always remember there is one Irishman. I think his name was Tracy. He's an RAF fighter pilot. They're quite a different type, of course, than bomber pilots, you know. I always remember his rude expressions. Come on, John, let's get off of these bloody fuckers. I thought, my God, hey, I can't, I'm just wounded here. What the hell? Well, I said, I'm not. And he got out somehow. I don't know what ever happened to him, but he's a typical fighter pilot. And I remember that bad language. He always called those Fs, you know. That's what he called these Germans. And then, but I wasn't really fit at all. But there was a collection of us. Then again, I think we were, with other people, were then transported to near. Sorry, wait a moment. I'm getting wrong here. I'm getting quite maybe wrong here, because I remember leaving Bruges. We went to this big barn, fireplace, huge place, but also had a time at Rennes, R-E-N-A-I-X, which was a kind of hostel of some sort. Now, I'm not sure which came first, but eventually they collected us all together. And we joined a barge on the river near Dordrecht, in Nijmegen, places like this. I knew exactly where I was, because during the daytime on this barge, we allowed out on the top. It's true, we were under the surveillance of the Germans' guns. But I remember the place like Nijmegen, Dordrecht, and it was just near Amsterdam. Then eventually, at night time, we were all pushed down into the hold. And it's remarkable there, because we're so packed. We're all packed like a tin of sardines. And then conditions were quite appalling. I mean, sanitary just didn't exist. It's all right when you got up in the during the daytime down on board, you see. You could make certain arrangements that way. But eventually the barge went through this lovely area of Holland to the border town of Emmerich, where we were debussed or deboated.
You presumably received no medical treatment?
No, none at all. Quite impossible. No treatment whatsoever. There was no treatment. I'm not sure how bad I was, but bear in mind, I obviously was, it didn't fester anything. But I had an idea at Rennes I got some sort of treatment. Bruges I must have got some little treatment. But it couldn't have been too bad. It mustn't have festered anything like this.
Were you suffering from any sort of shock symptoms? I mean, it was a wound to the head. Did you have any sort of shell shock or shock symptoms that you were aware of at the time?
I wasn't aware of anything like that. All I knew was I was probably a little bit weak. But I remember those two places, Rennes, Arien. Yes, they're the two places collected together.
So you went down the barge, on the barge to Emmerich?
Emmerich, yes. And then, of course, we were put into a cattle truck. You know, 20 Van de Cheveur, 300 hommes. And we went right through Germany, right through to a place called Caserle. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. which was a huge camp of about several thousand British officers. The most famous one there, and I confirm the real character, was Wing Commander Bader, or Bader they often call him. And he had about 4,000 or 5,000 British officers there. And in the neighbouring pounds, or compounds, you saw Russians. And really, looking at these Russians, they're almost not human, subhuman. But they must be much worse off than we were.
What do you mean they were subhuman? You mean they were kept in conditions? Or
no,
they looked?
No, when you looked at them, almost animal-like. When they're looking at you through the bars, as if they had lacked intelligence. In other words, there must have been a... but you can get in these countries in Europe, you can get them different type, or Far Eastern. I mean, obviously they were the riffraff of the Russians. Probably the cannon fodder, you see. And we could see them because it's another compound they had. And we there got our odd food there. We were there a few weeks.
You say Bader was there. Did you meet him? Or?
Oh, yes, because Bader... Oh, yes. I don't know why I met him.
What was your impression of him?
Well, a real extrovert. And a man with... Couldn't stand the goons, we used to call them. Couldn't stand them. And to get out. So, you know, eventually he got out. Then they dropped, when he's caught again, they dropped a wooden leg for him. Mm-hmm. But, no, I'm very impressed with some of these RAF types. Especially the fighting. The mad people were the fighters, but the very great. And the more serious ones were the bomber crews.
At any time yet, had you been interrogated at all?
I'd hardly ever interrogated. Because I remember at the time, all we were supposed to do was give our rank and number. At that time I knew my number was 68056 or something like this. And normally I was never subject to any real interrogation at all. It'd be quite pointless, really. Because bear in mind, when we separated from the battalion and I was wounded, then we went to the hospital and there was only 8 or 9 of us, you see. I don't know what happened to them.
So it would have been irrelevant because your battalion was evacuated from Dunkirk and you wouldn't know what was happening.
Wouldn't know. That's right. Peter Ellen. Mm-hmm.
What were conditions like in the large camp?
What's the word? There was a word. I'm trying to think. Sandy put it to me. I'm trying to think. What were the conditions like? Completely subhuman, uncivilized. Because bear in mind, you had several thousand British officers there. And then again, it's a sandy subsoil. And they're all digging with hands and bloody shovels and buckets and spades. Not spades, but implements to try and get out of the camp. In fact, it was honeycombed like a rabbit's warren. But of course, it wasn't much good to them. Didn't where they were. They had no preparation, no food, no nothing. But it was very chaotic there. And that was really a big, huge staging camp. Where conditions were. You got something to eat.
And this was near Cologne?
Castle, I think.
Castle.
Yes, C-A-S-S-E-L. I think it's called K, I think, or spelled K. It was somewhere near, I always remember somewhere near there, because in one of these camps, we were at the, in one of these stages, we were at one of these German concentration camps. I'm not sure before or after, I can't tell you. One of the German guests.
At the castle camp, what accommodation did you have? What were you living in?
Just huts. I'm not sure what the camp was originally. It must have been used for some purpose. But I can't tell you. Conditions there were very, very spartan.
Did you get enough food?
Well, I suppose we did, yes. I don't remember being laid up at all. I think we did. But there was a time we went to concentrate. We were at a concentration camp for a time.
Do you know which one?
No, it was the one where that great German tennis player was, Gottfried von Kramm. He'd been there. One of those. It was not, I'm sure it wasn't Buchenwald, because that's near the Czechoslovakian border, I think. Because I've just read Primo Levi's book, which is one of the most wonderful books ever written about being a prisoner of war and how right he is. That's beside the point. But I can't remember. Then we went down gradually. See, by this time...
Did you know what the concentration camp was? Did you have any idea of what was going on there at the time?
No, no idea at all. We just came to our notice of where we were at. We knew about German concentration camps through the press and information and news in England before the war. I'm pretty sure that was well known.
How long were you at the Castle camp, roughly?
A few weeks. And then we either went or had been before that to a concentration camp, but eventually went by cattle tracks south, and I always remember passing through Munich, and indeed through Salzburg. I'd appreciate Salzburg was in Austria. I remember going through Salzburg. And then gradually we came to a place called Laufen, which is on the river... It's the... the Salzach, which is the border between Austria and Germany. So, point of fact, we went by train into Austria, then we came across the border again to Laufen, which is on the Salzach, I'm sure of this. And then the camp was absolutely full of British officers. It's all British camp. Full of British officers. So we then moved, we were the original guests, at a place called Titmoning, or Titmoning, Titmoning, also on the Salzach, a few miles away.
So how long were you at Laufen before you moved to Titmoning?
10 days, a week, fortnight.
So it's not really a... you weren't there long?
No, it was full of British officers, though. Mm-hmm. We had time to have our hair shaved there. And a photograph taken. All our hairs.
You had your hair shaved right there?
Right back. Everybody had the hair shaved back. And then they were debugged, you see. And then a photograph was always taken of you. What happened was, they took a photograph of you when your hair was like this, and you actually had a little blackboard which you had to hold, which gave you the number, camp number, which was there from immortality to see. So you had a picture, if there was a picture of me, with my hair cut, shaved, and my little number here, camp number on, just for reference purposes. We didn't get these copies, but we saw them subsequently.
Now, you'd been captured, but you'd been captured in circumstances where you'd been last seen severely wounded. Mm-hmm. Had you had any opportunity to send any notice, or had any notice been sent to your family to say what had happened to you?
Well, there were the odd time where you certainly got some of the German Red Cross, or certain people were there who tried to contact prisoners of war and asked them to complete a card saying where they were, that they were wounded in Germany, something like this. Now, we were always filling these in. Now, I don't know whether this happened in Bruges, whether it happened in Rennes after Bruges, whether it happened at the other place, or whether it happened when we got to Castle, or all places. Well, we had no idea whether they ever got anywhere. But in the month of September, my wife subsequently told me that she got a card from me. One had got through eventually.
Now, what had she thought prior to that? Had you been reported missing?
I had been reported as killed in action. Because I think the CO, not the CO, the second in command of the battalion, he'd seen me in a distance after I was wounded and realised what I was like. But he wasn't with me at the time, but he must have seen me I can understand why he could see me. He's probably coming into me doing a reconnaissance. And he thought he saw me badly wounded. He realised I was badly wounded and reported me as killed in action. And then it was months... this was, of course, in May or June. Yes, May or June. And about... eventually, it's about September, I think it was, my wife got a card from the Red Cross, through the Red Cross, and I was alive. And then, of course...
It must have caused a great shock to the family, both events, I mean...
Oh, yes, well, of course, yes, this is true. I mean, but one never knows, you see, how they felt. It was a terrible shock to them, because he reported me, presumably when he got back from Dunkirk, or La Panne, I'd have been reported as killed in action, and I believe I achieved quite notoriety in the local newspaper, because it's so rare for anybody to be reported killed in action, you see, because the war just started, you see. And then when I became alive again, it apparently hit the headlines again. So my wife told me this, you see, because the thing was so rare, got very, very common later on, because bear in mind we were in the first engagement of the war, I think. And then, of course, nothing much happened there, but I always remember a great friend of mine saw my wife once, says, "My, there's Lazarus been risen from dead again." That's me. Couldn't keep me down. And I always tell these lovely stories that when the army discovered, or had been reported then, that I was alive, because when they had this card, they started taking action, then the Red, by this time, information would get through from German prisoner war camps to the Red Cross of all the list. And when they got themselves organised, that the army wrote and said, they'd be grateful if my wife, if she could see a way to refund the pension already paid her, but if she found it difficult, it didn't matter. Barclays Bank, my employers, gave her no option. They said, would you please refund the pension? And, don't worry, and I still remain with Barclays Bank till I retired, 20 years ago. But I always tell a lovely story, and I believe it went so far as most of my will had been proved. I don't think I lost any money. It hadn't been given away to useless people, but I know the army paid all legal expenses which were incurred. They had been dead for years, you see. And everything which was unscrambled was scrambled again. But the army very good to us. And so the bank very good. But I always tell a lovely story. Mind blowing.
So you were at Laufen and then you went up to Titmoni. Now you're at, well, when do you think you got there? Would it still be 1940 when you got there, or would you be into 41?
40.
Still in 40.
1940, because yes, 19. Must be 1940 because. Yes, because when we got to Laufen, you see, we were only there a day or two because there's no room for us. It was full of British officers.
So, about what month would it be? Late autumn, early winter, or?
I would say autumn.
Autumn 1940. Mm. And you were at Titmoni until, like you told, roughly 1942, we worked out last time, I think. Would that be right?
I think it's about 1942, 1943, because it wasn't a large cab, it was a schloss.
I was just going to go on to, actually. Could you describe the rough layout and circumstances of Titmoni camp?
I think it was a hunting lodge of some famous family, and it was above, a few hundred feet above, the River Salzach, which crossed the border of Austria and Germany. And I think it was very hard to say, but it was on a high, rocky ridge, and it was roughly circular in space. And the only chance we had of walking was round one side of it, because you couldn't be able to escape down. Well, he could, but something like that. And then all the room where you slept and where you ate and where you had little libraries and things like this were in all these old buildings. A typical old castle with a courtyard built on a promontory overlooking a steep bank down to the river.
And about how many British officers were in this camp?
That's a good question. Just a few hundred of us. Because by this time, you see, we were the last lot of the British Expeditionary Force. And nothing ever happened for those. Life was very, very quiet. Because you can imagine those days, because there's no other. I don't think any other engagements where prisoners of war were captured in Germany at that time. I'm sure this is right.
So it was just a static prison population?
Static. And I always tell every story about those days. We had. The commandant was quite a pleasant fellow, he'd von somebody, but he was obviously a bit of an aristocrat, you see, and where we were allowed to get certain privilege. We couldn't go, but the general was very good to us. He was very good to us. And we were able to get, through the Germans, and pay for, of course, with our camp marks, pay for a number of crates of glorious German lager. It was Löwenbräu, the great Löwenbräu. You still get today, one of the great drinks of the world. And I remember there, there's people like Charlie Hope down and going, Peter Dollar. Well, Charlie Hope, he was a Marks of Lithgow, he's now dead. And Peter Dollar was a great, he was one of these, he's with the King's Royal Rifles. Not hockey player, polo man, you see. And they're very well connected, this lot. And we had some very great characters there.
Well, let me just take you through some questions about the camp.
Yes, certainly.
As we go through, what exactly were the room? What was in the rooms where you were put? How big were they? How many officers would there be to a room?
It's a very hard question to answer there, because I say my recall is not very good. My long recall is not my present near recall is quite good, but long recall, it's hard to say, but it couldn't be many, because we only 10, 20 or 30 people, I think.
In a room?
Yes. And we had, by the way, we also had with us, you see, some of the RAMC staff who were prisoners of war with us, and also some of the orderlies who the Germans made do the very menial works in the camp. But conditions weren't too bad there.
What food did you get at Tittmoning?
Well, it was normally just the ordinary German rations, which were not very satisfying. I can't think what we got. Meats with stew. It's probably horse, but horse meat's very good, you see. And we're always permanently hungry. And I'm not sure whether it took a long time before Red Cross parcels started coming in. And I'm not sure whether they ever got any at Eichstätt. Not Eichstätt, sorry.
Tittmoning.
At Tittmoning. I'm not sure. But all I remember there was it's a very good mixed crowd. I mean, that's where I started giving grandparent recitals.
I'll come on to that. What did you get to drink while you were there? I mean, you mentioned you could get lager.
Well, we got this only, yes, but what happened was the time came where beer supply to the German army was almost reduced and knocked on the head because they couldn't afford to, they weren't able to produce the beer which was necessary, wanted, through the needs of wartime. They couldn't do this. So what happened? That had to stop. We were lucky as where we were in this village. They had it, you see. But that had to stop. It's all drink like that was stopped. Nothing ever came in the village. Except we weren't allowed in there for parole walks.
What did you normally drink in the camp then?
What we drank was Ursart's tea. That's all. Because at the time did come there where nothing was available in the village at all, because by this time things were getting very strict in Germany, and the Germans' public were being restricted on what the food weather with. Their rationing was very, very severe.
So as that was restricted, so were you?
Yes, naturally. Yes. We were purely, yes. Why we got this in the village, we were told Germans could get stuff in the village for us if the shops had it, you see. That's how we got the odd thing there, including beer, lager beer. But then you got strict rationing.
Did you get any tobacco while Germans?
No.
There was not,
because I got tobacco later on when I got sent back.
There was no canteen in the castle?
No, not to mine, I know.
So that was the replacement for canteen provision, in a sense, was the being that the Germans would get things from the village for you?
Yes, but only in the early days, very early days. And the commandant, obviously, was a type of man who was an absolute gentleman, and he probably encouraged this sort of thing.
Where did you get the camp marks from, the money you used to pay for? How did you come by that?
Some agreement with the Red Cross that if you're a prisoner, you're given paper money, which were called camp marks, which have no value except in the camp. In other words, if you escaped, they're absolutely useless. And then there was some system whereby they were supposed to, and you're allowed so many, depending on your rank, so many a week or so many a month. And some system where it's supposed to accumulate and you get repaid the difference after the war. Now, I'm not sure what happened there because there's a lot of talking being going on the last 5 or 6 years about a lot of prisoners of war owed money like this. Well, I mean, I don't think it's worth messing on about. I don't know whether that was the case at all. But we certainly spent very little money of camp marks which were issued to us. But by law, by some agreement with the Red Cross, they had to make available to us so much of our pay, which was then refundable by the British government to the Red Cross in front of the German government. It sounds easy on paper. It didn't really work out that way. Anyway, there's nothing you could buy. Because I'm not sure talk about this later, when Red Cross parcels started coming through fairly regularly. But I'm sure they hardly ever kept it at Tittmoning.
Did the officers have any sort of mess at Tittmoning? I mean, did you have any sort of...
Nothing like that. No, it did not matter what rank you were. Yes, you occasionally got... Yes, for a time. Wait a moment. I think this was the camp where the commander... We were in the 50th Division. Now, the commander was General Fortune. He was the... We were the 51st Division, the DLI and other units. And also, in that war where we were in Belgium and France, you had a Scottish Division, the 51st. and so General Fortune and his batman, another charming man, were prisoners, and I'm sure there was a tit morning. I think I should take the food round. It's my pleasure to go and see them once a day with their food. I'm sure it was General Fortune. That's a charming person. But we had a mixture of officers in the 50th Division and the 51st. That was tit morning. He's coming back to me now. I've forgotten all about those two. That's where I started. Yes, I remember now.
In the rooms, what sort of furniture or provision was there for sleeping? Do you remember at all? That's a bit detailed. You might not.
It's very detailed, but normally had these just these pallets where you slept on straw mattresses.
Were they bunk beds?
Yes, bunk beds, usually.
Just one on top of another?
Yes, I can't remember tit morning as well as I can the next camp.
What was the hygienic provision? Toilets, washing, that sort of thing, bathing. Was that all right at tit morning? Was the arrangement made?
I think you got a bath. They put a shower about once a month, or say once a week or something like this. Then you all had to crowd under it. And those people who'd never anybody see them undressed in their lives before found it very embarrassing, but those who had didn't matter much. But you had to get out of the water while you could and get a chance to. But the conditions were not funny, because that one little hose, it was only on for warm water for a short time. So you actually had to crowd under it and be out quickly. And then again we had the odd dentist and doctor there, because they, of course, were prisoners of war. But in time with these doctors and dentists, what happened to them, they were soon pushed away from our camp, because it's quite wrong that we should have four or five dentists and four or five doctors. But what happened, Laufen and Tit Morning were the collection for officers. But then these men were soon pushed off to stalags, because their need for those doctors was much more important than with us, you see. I remember that, and that's all come back to me. I remember I got some of my teeth done.
At Tit Morning?
Yes, and also the dentist, I think his name was Pickering. He's dead now, from Morpeth. And do you know, some of those stoppings, such as they were, lasted about 20 years, under the most appalling conditions which he had there. I remember that. I got free dental treatment.
Did he have any equipment at all? Did the Germans give him any equipment?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Well, he obviously gave him some, you know, but it wasn't very good. But they were well used, these dentists. I remember him.
What about the toilets? Were the toilets reasonably hygienic or normal?
When you say reasonably hygienic? Oh, no, it's what I... What's the word I'm thinking of? Not dirty, not filthy. Uncivilized. Yes, because bear in mind, they were never meant to accommodate so many people. But bear in mind, you're also having a collection of officers at the camp. They seem to be able to... Somehow they seem to have put cleanliness be next to godliness. It's amazing what they could do and what they did do.
Were you able to keep your uniform clean?
Well, normally the uniform was the sparsest. I mean, I just had my old battle dress and trousers on, and a pullover, and a khaki shirt. But there's no question of being smart. It does haircut and this sort of thing, because the filthies weren't there. But you could... Well, water was available, and soap of a sort was available. And one was able to keep the fans fairly clean. But nothing, not sparkling.